99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Thursday, Birds. Welcome into the Red Zone here on WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mikey Friendly alongside Braden Fulgerson and Ben Hootie. We're getting some Redbirds here soon. Before we do that, boys, how are we doing on another fine Thursday evening?
Feeling good. It's hell of a game last night, and it's kind of got the good vibes rolling to today. I know good weather's coming this weekend as well, so I'm excited for all that.
Braden?
Yeah, we're closing in on conference tournaments and getting some of the excitement for that. We'll be talking a lot about college basketball today, and I'm excited because it's been a pretty fun month to be able to follow that now that football's gone.
Well, with that in mind, before we discuss a little bit more about the Redbirds game, why don't we hear it ourselves from the last minute of the game and the big play of the Kinsanity from our very own Ben Hootie and Lauren Leisure on the call last night.
Ref and Coach Peden having a discussion over Miles Foster. They have Chase Walker and Lewis in right now. Foster wants to check into the game, and he will for the freshman, Chase Walker. So some decisions to be made here. The Redbirds in a bunch, all in the paint. They're all going to split out here on the break. Banks trying to find someone. Gets it out to Kinzinger. Kinzinger's going to take the shot for the win, and he knocks it in! Johnny Kinzinger knocks it in at the buzzer, and the Redbirds win the basketball game.
Lots of excitement here in Sefke tonight, and no surprise, that's a winning score from Kinzinger.
Put it in the freshman's hand and let him knock it in. Wow, what a shot from the freshman. That takes guts, and he managed to knock it right in. Fade away on the left side of the court. Huge basket from the freshman, and the legend just continues.
Coach Peden has a lot of faith in that freshman, and that just proves it right there.
Ben, that was an electric call. What was going through your head in that moment as Johnny Kinzinger continued this Linsanity run?
I kind of blacked out, I'm not going to lie. It was a really good game to call. Pretty honored, honestly, because I would say that's probably the best game that has been at SEFQ all year long. Just an incredible game. The Redbirds were fighting back and forth with the Bears the entire way and kind of blew it at the end. They had a nice little lead, and for them to close out yet another game, as we've been seeing recently. And, all credit in the world to Johnny Kinzinger, who managed to let me make that call, because it was an awesome, unreal atmosphere at the stadium yesterday for the last home game of the year.
Lauren on color there did a fabulous job. She also wrote a story, which is available on WZND.com, with some quotes from the presser. It's a great story. This one jumped off the page to me, though. Johnny discussing the play in which he kind of lets loose here. It's, at least to me, it seems like he lets loose a little bit that the play was drawn for him. He says, "We got in the huddle and coach drew up a great play with little screen to screener action. We executed it perfection," Kinzinger said. "Miles Foster had a great screen on the guy guarding me, and Dalton Banks had me right in the shooting pocket, and it was ball game from there." Yeah, that kind of might let loose that the play was drawn for him.
The plan was either for him or Poindexter, Peden told us in the
So
it makes Poindexter sense. And Kinzinger both went out right, and exactly what Johnny said. Coach Peden felt like it would be a perfect place, just him in the pocket, and he knows that either of them could hit that shot. But once again, as you said, Kinsanity, who else would you rather have gone to at the end of the game the way it was going?
And so let's contextualize what this means for ISU, because now coming off a win and a loss for Murray State, they stand as the 7th seed in the MVC. Going to be able to go for 6 because they're down 2. Each team has 1 game left in MVC play. That's all going to be on Sundays when the conference is going to finish up and we have our final seed set for Arch Madness. But Illinois State, because they swept the season series against Murray State, win that tiebreaker against them. And as long as they hang on against the worst team in the Valley on Sunday, they would be set up to be a 7 seed, and they'd be playing at 6 o'clock right here next Thursday.
Yeah. With you on the call.
And that's very exciting.
We'll have to do some kind of programming adjustments if need be. We're going to wait and make those things happen once we know for sure they're playing at 6 o'clock. But my guess is we would run red zone a little bit early going right into the basketball game. Mm. We would run red zone with myself, Ben, and maybe one other. And then you, Julian, and Joey would call the game from St. Louis at nighttime. It's a big, big Z&D sports night.
I will say this is some crazy momentum they have going into this tournament. And, you know, we haven't even talked about it yet, but a tough loss to Bradley, but hard fought. They had them on the ropes the entire time, and it just kind of came down to the final few possessions. So this is exactly what you want to see, and it's kind of what we've been alluding to the last couple of weeks. It feels like there's finally a culture shift, and mm-hmm. it'll be huge because, if they continue to win like this, imagine kind of keeping this crew around for next year as well yeah. and what you could potentially do. And they could still make noise in the Missouri Valley yeah. Conference tournament, but it's going to be a tough hill to climb, needless to say. So I just think this is good, positive momentum and a culture shift in a basketball team that really needed it.
And, we talk a lot about Kinzinger, and I could understand why some might be saying, well, what about the rest of the team? Well, the whole culture shifted when Kinzinger became yeah. a reliable part yeah. of this team. I remember being on the call of the Norfolk State game. It was a loss, but it was close, and it was down to the wire because of Kinzinger's shooting. And it was, soon after that, the Coach Peden, realized, got to be able to get some of these minutes to some of these guys that are showing up and showing out in these games like this. And players like Kinzinger have really changed the way this team worked, and that was what change for the second half of the season, heading into conference play for the Redbirds, that they were able to go from a team that earlier in the year was losing to a team as bad as Valpo, and now is in good shape and has themselves a legitimate shot in St. Louis.
I mentioned this during the broadcast as well last night, Mikey. I was just kind of plucking my brain of Johnny Kinzinger knowledge, and I remember when we went to that opening press conference. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been after the Wesleyan game, mm-hmm. and we were talking. I feel like everyone in the media thought this was going to be more of what Ty Pence was, mm-hmm. right?
People loved Ty Pence early on. And he's been a solid bench option.
And it was Coach Peden that continually just kind of harped on saying,
right.
Kinzinger's a guy, like he's a tough kid. And obviously we've seen that over the last couple of weeks, but we were kind of like, he's a 5'8",
yeah.
like, from Wisconsin.
That's why a lot of people
wrote him off. It was just confusing. And yeah. a lot of people wrote him off, and he's been the best player for the Birds over the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, you had Ty Pence, who was like theoretically on paper looked to be your stronger guard, and then you had Chase Walker, who is just a monster in the middle there, who you knew would know his role as well. And like you said, Ben, Peden, to his own credit, knew that Kinzinger was going to be this good, and really kind of shifted starting him when it was that Horton game he did that well. But it was after they lost to Valpo, which they're playing again on Sunday, 59-50 at home in early January. Peden's quote, we've talked about it here on the show a couple times, Peden's quote was something along the lines of like, all right, I'm going to start playing those who I know can want to be out there and want to win or whatever. And it hasn't been that much of a shift, but it seems like Johnny's been starting every game since then. He's picked up two freshmen of the year. He picked up a Missouri Valley Conference player of the week, not freshman of the year, freshman of the week, although he's potentially making a case, so... late in the season. But another one of the quotes from the game I wanted to bring up from Lauren's story, which is available on WZND.com, talking about Miles Foster, who has really began to get into his role this season as well. He is the reigning MVC Defensive Player of the Week. He said, it's awesome now being a senior, kind of just looking at Johnny hitting the game winner as a freshman. You just reflect on how quickly these 4 years go by. And so the early overreaction as ISU has their first stud basketball player since Antonio Reeves, it seems like their first breakout star. The early overreaction, are we going to see 4 years of Johnny Kinzinger in the red and white here in Normal?
I saw someone say on Twitter last night that State Farm better give him a call with that NIL money because, if you want to continue this, as we were talking about, this culture shift in this basketball program, I think the key to that is keeping Kinzinger around. And who knows, like, can having a face of a college program that could potentially bring in other recruits yeah. and other transfers and maybe even some of these guys that have fifth years coming up yeah. for them to stick around if Johnny's also going to stick around. So there's definitely some big decisions that are going to be at play this offseason, but I think we just got to get through St. Louis first and hopefully they can make some noise there.
And you don't know exactly when it's time to pivot in terms of recruiting, but you got to think that with finding some of these players that have started to work for Peden, it's not only kind of proven that he was right on some of these guys that he's been taking a chance on,
right?
But he's also kind of got a better idea of how the next set of Redbirds are going to fit into this team, and so that will definitely be helpful for Coach Peden as well.
I love his whole mantra, the Midwest recruiting thing. He talked about it in his first press conference ever as ISU head coach. He talked to Ben and I about it in our preseason press conference with him in the practice gym at Horton. He's telling us all he wants to do is bring up a great Midwestern team. He knows it from Ohio State, from U of I, from Worcester, from all the teams he's been at before, and he's putting together a team. He found a random kid from Wisconsin who ends up being enough to make call it Kinsanity. The team themselves is now calling it Kinsanity, so I think it's probably okay to call it that. Yeah,
Poindexter alluded to it in his press conference.
Yeah. So the guys say it too?
Yeah.
What was his quote about it?
It was like, I mean, he was kind of just like, I mean, Kinsanity, man. Give him the ball at the end of the game, he's going to hit the shot, and he was just kind of just talking about how proud he was of him. And,
right.
And that's what it kind of seems like, because when you look at this team, it's four freshmen and a bunch of fifth years and fourth-year seniors with some eligibility, some none. So I'm assuming that these older guys are kind of playing a big role in the younger kids' heads and just kind of, you know, marinating them into college basketball players.
Well, that tells me all I need to know, too, about if Johnny's a decent guy and, like, a good teammate.
Yeah.
And it seems like he totally is. All of these guys who are years older than him are so proud of him and so excited for him, so excited to play with him. It seems like he was waiting for his chance. I'm sure he goes hard in practice, and I'm sure he was waiting for his chance to kind of pop off. And the start of 2024 has been everything Johnny Kinzinger could want it to be, that's for sure. We talk a lot about him here at the start of our show. But other than that, as Braden alluded to, as a team in total, the Redbirds now at 15-15. They have a chance on Sunday to really boost their conference standings as they get into the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. Let's get on to baseball just a little bit. Speaking of the transfers, I did notice that we have Daniel Pacella back for year two, and he's already leading the team in long balls.
He's got 3 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting team right now. I'll say that. Needless to say, they have not a lot of pitching help.
No,
and you know they're losing games to St. Thomas and Little Rock right now.
Yeesh.
It's not going to get much easier when you get to Missouri Valley Conference play. I think they have a solid offense across the board. When you look at, I know Augie Rasmussen's currently dealing with an injury, so he's obviously pivotal because he was their best player last year. Luke Lawrence and Judah Morris, and as you mentioned, Daniel Pacella have been hitting the ball really well, but it just doesn't seem like they have a well enough pitching staff to kind of carry them. And some of those veterans that they lost last year that kind of kept them afloat for a while, they're all gone, and it's just a younger staff and a couple transfers, and I just don't think it's going to work out in their favor for the rest of the season.
Some wiffle ball games against St. Thomas to start the year. 18-12 ISU win in their first of only 2 wins in the season through 7 games. Next day against St. Thomas, 20-8 loss. So yeah, the pitching help is in dire need right now. Although the offense has been scoring a lot of runs, it's in dire need. I mean, they're losing 10-5 to Little Rock. They're beating Little Rock 14-5 the day before, and of course in Evanston on Tuesday they lost 5-1. There was a nice home run in that one. I think it was it Judah Mort who was it who had that home run? I saw the clip.
Oh, Shy Robinson.
Shy Robinson. Yeah.
He's a really good player too. Mm-hmm. That I think will be crucial to that middle infield for the next couple of years.
Yeah, Shy Robinson was very good from what I saw from him. You know, being with, you know, the normal Corn Belters and all that, and with, you know, their prospect league that they had going. But, you know, now that he's transitioned to Illinois State, he's also, you know, been a very good bright spot for them in terms of their offense. They're, you know, like you said, their pitching is a problem that their offense isn't going to be able to make up for right now. But they have a solid set of young guys that will get them closer.
Big series, number 9, Vanderbilt, starting next Friday in Nashville. A win could be huge for them. And then, of course, they move on to number 20, Indiana, after that in a midweek. So there's those Big Ten matchups that you look to look at. Obviously, Vanderbilt in the SEC, but Indiana, of course, another Big Ten matchup. They're big friends of those. Last year, they beat Iowa, and I believe the year before they beat Purdue, and they beat somebody else big time last year as well in the Big Ten.
They beat Iowa, who was ranked at the time,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
And then
it was when they were on that. They only lost one game. They had the most wins in the nation. They came to ISU, and ISU beat them.
The year before, I was on the call with David Moses, was when Purdue came to ISU for ISU's first home game on a midweek right after spring break.
Yeah.
And Purdue had not lost a game through the first 16. And ISU walked him off with a stealing of home by JT Sokolov.
Yeah, that was awesome. It seems to be like the script is kind of flipped. Usually they kind of stay afloat until
Yeah,
until they
play.
Get to conference play, and then they just crash and fall, and hopefully this year maybe the script can flip a little bit and they can not get off to the hottest start and then go berserk in conference play.
Way more baseball coming up at 6:30. Before then, though, Tom LaMonica coming up on the Red Zone. Welcome back to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. I've had the pleasure of being in class with Tom LaMonica, who is a Redbird sports legend, got honored at the basketball game last night, spent his entire career as a Redbird communications sports employee, and then after 2006, I believe, he said he moved on to teaching, and he has become a great professor in the School of Comm and is now going to be an MVC Hall of Famer. So I kick it off to you two boys, who tell us a little bit more about Tom and your interview with him before we hear from him.
Well, that's really all the context you need in terms of, you know, what to know ahead of time. We were able to talk about the tournaments coming up, both men's and women's. We were able to talk about the history of how that started. Talked about the beginning of Illinois State being at the Missouri Valley Conference as well, which is something that,
very cool,
you know, you don't think about by now. Like, at some point, Illinois State had to join their conference and choose what conference they were in. There's a lot of interesting stuff that, you know, even as someone that has a class with them every single week for 3 hours, there was still a lot of stuff that I was able to learn from this one.
I remember when he talked to us when Ben and I were with him on a trip to the Bulls game, actually, in the fall. He told a story about being an SID and trying to arrange a press conference for Indiana State to talk to the media first, and it being Larry Bird. So he's been in the game for a long time, and he has a lot of stories to tell. So coming up here on the Red Zone.
With this year's team for women's basketball, we already kind of knew the women's team was good last year. Didn't get it done in the tournament, but they were the first seed, and so they were just kind of trying to run it back and see what they could do this year. They were expected to be good. The men's team was the opposite, and so the recent success that the men's team is having and kind of them improving their positions, their opportunity for seeding, things like that, does that kind of change your outlook for you heading into St. Louis?
Well, looking at St. Louis from the Redbird standpoint, I think the thing that most coaches would say they'd like to have going into the conference tournament is momentum. And the Redbird men have a chance to build momentum with the last couple of games coming up and with the way they played for the last 3 weeks. They haven't won all the games, but the games have been competitive, and they've shown that the final product could be greater than the sum of the parts. And so they've become an exciting team to watch. Not for necessarily the flashy and exciting things they do, but for the way they play. And I think that's another thing. And when it comes to the Missouri Valley, those teams that play hard and play with discipline and don't take plays off, those make a difference in the conference tournament. So from the men's standpoint, I think they could be disruptive. They're going to definitely have to come from Thursday to get to the championship game, and that has only been done once in the men's tournament. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for excitement and possibly an upset or two for the men's team. I really like our coaching staff. I really like the way they've got these guys playing.
How many conference tournaments have you been to in your career, if you can
remember?
Well,
if I can remember, it's probably been, well, every year, at least one of them since we've been in the Missouri Valley Conference, and that's more than 40 years. So I've probably seen 60 or 70 conference tournaments in person between the men and the women. And, you know, they're special. In the Missouri Valley, they're special. We've been in St. Louis for more than 30 years. Doug Elgin, a good friend of mine, the former commissioner of the Missouri Valley Conference, when he came up with the idea of a single-site, neutral-site tournament for men's basketball, I thought he's crazy. But he had a great answer for me. He said, this was in 1988 or 89, we had this conversation. He said, Tom, either this is going to work and we'll have a lot of success in St. Louis, or in 4 or 5 years you're going to be talking to a different commissioner. That tells you about Doug Elgin. He was willing to risk his career for an idea he believed in. And then later on, the women's basketball tournament got to a point where the home team had won. Low seed home teams, including Illinois State, had won. And the conference had the opportunity to go neutral site in suburban St. Louis and now in Moline. And Patty Viverito, the retired commissioner of the Women's Conference, who's still the commissioner of the Gateway Football Conference, her vision got that going for a single-site tournament. And now it's very exciting and wide open for the women. I think in the women's side, as far as teams that have a chance to win the tournament, there's probably five or six this year. And that's unusual in Valley women's basketball. But I think five or six would have a chance. Drake certainly has the best chance because they've just got one conference loss, and that's to us. They have a lot of firepower. But, you know, Drake is a really strong offensive team, and if one of those days the shots aren't falling, it kind of happened to Illinois State last year in the tournament. They just couldn't get the shots to fall.
For people that have never been to Quad Cities or St. Louis for these tournaments, can you just kind of describe, like, what the feeling is with the fans there and everything that comes along with it?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned fans, because that's the big part of it, is for the fans. The fans are on vacation.
Yeah.
They're on, like, their basketball vacation, and they can root for their team. And I know particularly in the men's tournament, sometimes alliances are formed, like, you know, we're Southern Illinois. We don't really like Illinois State very much. And, you know, Illinois State's playing Drake. We're going to root for Drake. So you get those kinds of things. But people really enjoy the variety. They enjoy looking at more than one game in a day. And they enjoy the atmosphere. And the Valley does a great job of providing atmosphere of contests and games in between the timeouts. For example, the men's tournament in St. Louis has a guy named Todd Thomas. Todd Thomas is the guy who does the between innings entertainment in Busch Stadium for the Cardinals. He also does the Valley tournament. And that guy is like a magician. You know, he gets people riveted to the boards, the jumbotrons during timeouts. He's interviewing people. He's conducting contests. He's asking questions. And his out cue is always the same. Is your team going to win today? Make some noise. And that creates noise and excitement coming out of that timeout. So when I talk about the fan experience, Todd Thomas, he's a guy, I think he's a special part of it.
Still here on the Red Zone podcast with ISU professor Tom LaMonica. Now, Tom, another important part of these conference tournaments, as I remember last year doing the women's tournament, is networking. You get a lot of students coming up and covering it, say, for WZND and other media sources that get this opportunity to meet a bunch of people that are in this professional sports world, you know, yeah, handing out resumes. What does that mean to give that opportunity to these people?
Well, I enjoy a little bit of that myself, but for example, when I work the women's tournament, my partner in we provide game notes and thoughts and ideas and statistics and things like that to the broadcast teams that are doing the game. And my partner in doing that is a gentleman named Chuck Schaffner. Chuck Schaffner is the retired Associated Press editor for the state of Iowa. And he's a guy, a really experienced guy, who likes to talk to young people, likes to talk to young journalists about starting out in their career. And we have people around that are like that, that are part of the tournament, that people can network with, whether it's coaches, whether it's media, whether it's even fans sometimes.
What do you think it would mean for this community if one of these teams were able to make a run in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament, whether it's men's or women's?
Well, I think when you say make a run, I think the first thing they do is, I've been in this situation where you're in St. Louis, and I will get there the Wednesday before the game start. You're in St. Louis, and your team wins on Thursday, your team wins on Friday. Now, all of a sudden, the traffic is backed up, you know, halfway to normal because the fans are jumping in their cars and going down to St. Louis and say, I'm going to get us to the finals and I'm going to stay for the championship game. So when your team makes a run, whether it's Illinois State or any school, then the fans get caught up in that and they come to St. Louis. And the best thing that happens with that is they have a good time in St. Louis, and a lot of them turn around and say, you know, next year we're going to come on Thursday or Friday and stay for the whole thing.
To bring it back to you, Tom, obviously you're getting honored for the Missouri Valley Hall of Fame. And, you know, could you just take us, to start, before we get into anything else, just take us through what positions you've had, where, you know, I know, for example, where you started and things like that, but what all have you done in terms of having jobs and doing work for the Valley?
Yes. Well, so the first... My first experience with the Valley was when I first got to Illinois State. And we were an independent school at the time. We did not have a conference affiliation, but we were trying to get into the Missouri Valley. And, in fact, I took the job here banking on the fact that we would get into the Missouri Valley. I thought it was the right conference for Illinois State at the time. And in 30-plus years, my mind has not changed. So that was my first experience with the Missouri Valley. I didn't know a lot about Illinois State when I got here, but I learned a lot about Illinois State and its programs because we had, in those days, you had to produce a big pile of documents to get into the Missouri Valley Conference or pretty much any conference. And I was charged with editing those documents. And while I read those documents, I learned things like, you know, the history of our women's swimming program and just the whole analysis of the program itself and of the school and how it felt about athletics. And it made me more energized. And when we got into the Missouri Valley in June of 1980, just a few months after I got here, it was a big day. And it's paid dividends for us since then. In the last 30 years or so, I have never had somebody come up to me and say, we should be in a different conference. And that says a lot about the Valley. It also says a lot about what Illinois State has brought to the Valley.
So what does it mean to you, then, to be able to get this honor? It seems like you're deeply rooted in Illinois State. You're deeply rooted in the Missouri Valley Conference.
You guys are sharp young guys, and you really know how to turn a phrase and write a phrase. And when you can come up with a way for me to quantify that, I'd be happy to use your your words. But it's still kind of surreal to me. I still keep thinking, you know, we're talking to somebody else. Because I never had this expectation at all. I spent my career in sports trying to get other people, student athletes, coaches, teams, recognized and respected and get them honored and awarded. For me, I have no ability to deal with that myself. You can tell I'm kind of struggling right now. But I think it means a lot to my family. And it means a lot to my friends and my former students. For me, the best part of it is this. I've heard from more than 400 former students and former colleagues since this was announced. And that means a lot to me. That's what means everything to me, is the ability to connect with them and find out what they're doing. And, you know, just that connection. The connection's big.
So what's next for you in terms of, you know, your job right now is working, you know, here in Fell Hall with the School of Communication. Is that kind of, you know, are you thinking about doing anything else? Is there anything that you have planned for your future? Is this just where you like to be right now?
I'm one of those fortunate few who works because he wants to, not because he has to. When I retired from athletics in 2006, I was able to become part of the pension system in the state of Illinois. And what I get, my compensation from the School of Communication is very small because there's legal limits on what you can earn if you're drawing a state pension. And I don't care about any of that. I mean, my wife and I are comfortable, we're happy, we're able to contribute to causes that we care about. And so it's more like I'm doing this because I love to do it, and I want to keep doing it because I love to do it. And the sports communication major, which could be coming on board as soon as 2025, that's an exciting thing to me because you guys both know I'm very passionate about sports and people being able to work in sports. And this will be a really good opportunity for a lot of students that come through Illinois State to be able to connect with our alums who are working in sports or have worked in sports, to connect with current professionals. I'm very excited. Dr. Joe Blaney is the man who has carried the heavy lifting on this. Our interim executive director, Dr. Amy Miller-Ott, has had a lot to do with this. And the provost office, the president, it's been a process. And now future Redbirds are going to be able to study sport communication and build careers from that. And that, to me, that's the exciting future for me.
And so what is your place in that in terms of that major? Do you plan on?
Well, I hope to continue teaching in it. and whatever other programs that we put together to connect our students with the world of sports on the outside, I want to be involved in that too. There's no set plan just yet, but I know Dr. Blaney has a lot of ideas. I have some ideas, and we're going to see what happens once we get the ball rolling here. But we have a lot of resources and a lot of opportunities.
WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Great folks from Mike Finelli and Benjamin Hootie. Great interview there with Tom Boys. I appreciate you guys putting that together. And I said I was mad I missed it. I wish I could have been there, but it seems like you guys got some real good stuff out of Tom. And he's really excited for the tournament. And I'm sure he has been for years. The coolest part of that to me is hearing about what you said in the newscast, the moving to St. Louis thing, and how he thought it was crazy from the get-go to move the conference tournament to St. Louis. Because I got to thinking about it, and yeah, it only is the basketball tournaments that are set one place. Like volleyball moves around, and I'm pretty sure baseball moves around. Like pretty much every other conference tournament for the MVC is hosted by a school.
Yeah, I remember him talking about it. I don't remember if this was for men's or women's, but I think it might have been women's. But either way, he was talking about Illinois State having hosted it really recently, and Redbird fans questioning, you know, we had an amazing crowd and everyone was there and it was loud and it was a great event. Why would we move mm-hmm. it somewhere else and lose that? But I mean, conference tournaments, yeah. It's crazy to think of not being at a neutral site by now. Everyone does it.
Yeah. All right. We move on to Around the Horn, Around the Bases, whatever we're going to call it. It's going to be our news segment, as we've been doing for pretty much every show, where we all take one story from the realm of sports news and do a deep dive for a couple minutes into why we think it's something to talk about. I think all of us have baseball things today, so we're truly throwing it around the horn.
Yeah.
We'll start with Ben.
Yeah, I'm back. We're back. Cubs are back.
Back.
Feels good. We've been talking about it for weeks on this show. Mikey's brought it up multiple times.
Yes.
All the Cubs have to do is just sign Cody Bellinger. And what did Jed Hoyer, Scott Boras, and Cody Bellinger do? They got a deal done. It's probably not the flashiest of deals for most people, but I think it works for both parties. All that matters is that Cody Bellinger is in the lineup, in the middle of that lineup, in 2024, taking over center field and first base for the Cubs. They were severely lacking that power when you looked across the lineup. They were lacking that one guy, it feels like, and they could still do more additions. I think Scott Boras and Jed Hoyer were potentially hinting at it yesterday. Probably mm-hmm. not, but you know, there's a chance. But I think the Cubs team finally feels complete. It felt like that one truly missing piece of the puzzle that can potentially win a nationally central championship this year. So I know Braden probably doesn't like to hear that, but I think the Cubs, when you put them on paper, probably compare better to most teams in the National League Central now, when we're considering odds. So Cody Bellinger's back on a 3-year, $80 million deal, and it just feels good.
Thoughts on that contract?
I think it works for both sides. I think I would rather have had him locked down for a long time, but at the same time, there is the part of it that he only has really had one prove-it season. So I mm-hmm. guess he gets to go out now, prove it once again, and if he does well enough, he can opt out and try and get that final contract probably for the rest of his career. Or if not, if it's not a season that will not demand $30 million a year, or that big contract that he's looking for, then he'll stay another year. It works for both sides. You know, Jed Hoyer doesn't love to give out big deals, and I don't think he wanted to walk himself into another Jason Hayward situation, even though that was Theo, not Jed, but still same core.
Yeah.
It's just exciting. It's been a long time coming, and it feels good to have Cody Bellinger back on the north side this year.
Well, you had a Jason Hayward situation in the midst of what was going to be, you know, a lot of playoff runs in a row, and
yeah.
you had a lot of good players and a lot of good talent you needed to hang on to. Right now, you've sold off a lot of that talent and a lot of that budget. And how do you get yourself back to that level? Well, you find someone to build around, and they can afford to pay for Bellinger right now. I don't know if the contract is front-loaded, back-loaded, or anything, but
it's mostly front-loaded.
And it makes sense because they can afford it right now. They don't have anyone crazy. They got a lot of young guys as well. And, you know, when you have a player as good as that to build around, you want to be paying from now when you can afford it rather than when you have a really good team around you and you're stuck paying for someone that's going to eventually probably get to a much lower level in terms of play at some point.
there's only one group more pretentious around this time than the agents of baseball players. It's the ones who have a vote for the Hall of Fame. And Braden Fogerson, you said that's what you want to throw it around the horn to today. I know it's a couple weeks late, but we had a lot of football talk to end the season. We've been keeping up with the MLB free agency. So now that the dust is settling before the MLB season, air the grievances about the MLB Hall of Fame.
You know, there's really, it's not even about this year's choices or anything, because it's always been a conversation. But I think to me, everyone has their own philosophies on Hall of Famers. You know, do you get steroid players in? Do you look at, you know, what analytics are best in terms of deciding who's good? And I figured now is a good time, you know, especially when the news itself isn't fresh. There's nothing really to update on. It came and went. But to me, I mean, the league now is so analytics-based, and it's been that way since the early 2000s, and now all sorts of players spend their time not only watching film, not only watching other teams that they have to play, but also paying attention to analytics and trying to find new stats and pay attention to the stats already given that help you keep track of how much of an impact you're making on your team. And I'm sorry, those stats cannot apply to the players that played before those stats existed. When we were talking about players that only were looking at batting average, RBIs, home runs, stuff like that, you can sure take a look at a player that was kind of iffy and look at statistics that weren't around at the time and say, yeah, that player actually was much more valuable than he was considered because we now have these stats that we can keep track of. But if it's the opposite side, to me, I don't think you can fault a player for that because they didn't have the resources available that we do by now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Hall of Fame will always, especially in the NFL, or excuse me, MLB, because it's so hard to get into, it's always going to cause debate. I feel like if it was like the National Football League or even NBA lets anyone in, we would never have this debate, but there is what you said. There's so many different eras, and obviously the steroid era plays such a huge role that it kind of screws a lot of people over. And I think the three that got in this year are right, that those three deserve to be in there, which is Adrian Beltre, Joe Mauer, and who am I missing? Todd Helton. Those are the three, and they're all very deserving. But as you said, there's a lot of players that just are end up missing out on it.
I was brushing up on my story so we can move on to that. And if you guys are ready, it's similar. As Brad mentioned, Todd Helton, we're going to talk about some baseball. This Athletic story that Ben kind of just put me on before we recorded today because I was in class all day. And as a big Cubs fan, it was a good read. I just finished reading it. This Chris Bryant spotlight about Chris Bryant, who one of the lines in the story that cuts kind of deep is them saying he went from a career that was – Bryant won the Rookie of the Year and MVP in a World Series in the span of two seasons upon his call-up. The early returns hinted at a Hall of Fame career. Now 32, Bryant stood inside the Rockies clubhouse on an early morning before his first spring training game. The billboards are gone. The expectations, too. Cooperstown, that's not likely to happen either. By Sam Blum with The Athletic. Great story. I just finished up reading that one. And it's a sad truth about one player, sure, and Chris Bryant, but I think it stands for a larger conversation, and especially released right now on purpose, as three superstar players, three all-star players, three award-winning players are still unsigned. And they called them the Boris 3, Boris 4, whatever you want to call it. Could you see something like this happening for a Matt Chapman, for potentially a Blake Snell towards the end of his career? I think it's just it's situational. Obviously, Chris Bryant was way younger, but it's sad to see these players hold out this long and not get the deal they want, and then literally seeing Chris Bryant say as an active member of the Rockies, essentially, that he regrets it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I think it's just such a different environment of baseball now, and Chris Bryant's situation was so way different, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if he went into free agency just looking for the biggest contract or somewhere to spend
lost.
The rest of his career in, which he will ultimately end up doing once this Rockies contract is over. But I don't know. When we're talking about the Boris Four, I feel like Cody Bellinger kind of set a path for what's going to happen with these following three free agents, where it's going to be bigger annual years with more opt-outs, whereas Chris Bryant can't get out of this contract at all.
That's the thing.
I think what Chris was trying to do was follow what his buddy Bryce Harper did.
Yeah.
And just say, hey, Scott, let's find a place that I can lock in and just be here for the rest of my career and try and do some winning. And what Bryce was able to do was turn an entire franchise around and become one of the most lovable teams in baseball. Meanwhile, Chris Bryant just went – his decision doesn't really make that much sense because he went to a team that a year before that paid the Cardinals to give up the best third baseman in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes there with a team that really has no direction, no future, even going back – how many years ago has it been since he signed his contract? Two now?
2 years.
And he's just in a tough spot, and I do feel for him because he really was on that Hall of Fame track after what you mentioned.
Yeah.
And just kind of all went away.
Can I ask who the – sorry, before we continue. No, go for it. Can I ask who the Boris Four are? I don't know if we clarified
that. It's still Chapman, Snell, Montgomery, and then you can supposedly slide J.D. Martinez in there now because –
the four people that are still not signed to an MLB team because Boris is their agent.
Because Boris is their agent, and then there's guys like J.D. Martinez, or now – who's not represented by Boris, but Joey Votto, who slide into this – okay, Bellinger got signed because it trickles down. It's like now that Bellinger signed, other teams that didn't get Bellinger might be interested in calling a Votto or a J.D. Martinez.
I mean, we talk about the Boris Four, but it's not – those aren't the only free agents that are out there right now. As you mentioned, Joey Votto is still available. Adam Duvall, Brandon Belt, just JD. Guys that are looking for jobs that I think they could find a job. It's just there's – and Scott kind of put it best. I don't agree with most things that Scott says, but yesterday in Cody Bellinger's press conference, he said – there's this weird thing around baseball right now where last year 11 teams that went all in and spent a ton of money, for some reason they're opting out of that because of the weird rights deals that are going on right now with the different TV programming and Bally Sports and whatnot. So there is this idea that a lot of MLB owners and GMs don't want to spend right now. And that's left all these great hitters and pitchers out on the open market that still have yet to find a home. And we're about to be a week in a playing spring training games.
Did Chris Bryant kill the big contract? Is that what the story's kind of getting at?
That's definitely a big part of it. I would say him and probably Anthony Rendon.
Mm-hmm.
Because
who's literally admitted he doesn't want to play baseball.
I would imagine the new deal somehow shook that up. I don't know how.
No, absolutely.
But the new deal for, the players union coming together and ending that strike. I'm sure that changed how
they talk. I'm sure like Ben pointed out, I'm sure they see what happened to a guy like Chris Bryant. Cody Bellinger is not, I don't think Cody Bellinger ever really wanted to sign a 10-year contract. But then again, you get that security. I mean, one thing that Chris can always fall back on is he has that security. He has that now generational wealth because he signed that crazy contract. I'm sorry that you have to play for such a terrible team and you have all these injuries, but it's, at the end of the day, he gets paid. At this point, if he signed a 1 or 2 year Cody Bellinger opt-out deal, he'd be – I don't know what he'd be doing.
One more player that I just thought of that probably – that happened last year that probably ended the long-term deal is Xander Bogaerts.
Because
think about where that contract has put the Padres. They had to trade generational superstar Juan Soto just because they tried to go all in 1 year and they have tax problems and – all this just because of Xander Bogaerts, who's now playing second base.
You stay classy, San Diego. We'll be right back on 3 Up, 3 Down. Minutes left in the show. 14, actually. We got 3 Up, 3 Down for 13 and a half minutes. Let's go over the standings first. I think you guys know what I'm going to get at.
Very conveniently decided to not forget to do the standings.
This week I didn't forget.
Remember when you wanted to forget it when I was in first?
Yep. Remember when I would constantly forget it during pick six? Because I was towards the bottom. I would just forget it every single week.
Yeah.
This week I'm not. 17-7. I'm batting 708.
How about that?
On the season. Steve is 16-8. Also is Ben. Braden is 14-10. We move to Steve's first pick of week 5. Do we think Steve will pick? Okay, before we're going to have a little side bet. Before I read Steve's games, how many Power 5 schools will Steve have this week?
2.
I think we'll have more than normal because there's less.
Good point. It's
going on. But I bet there was a lot of like whack action.
I will be honest. Fact check me here, Ben, as I tilt my computer towards you, but I don't think he has any. I think he went 12 for 12 with like mid-major schools.
It's all mid-major.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I think he at least had some. Yeah, he had Louisville and Duke last week. I think that was it last week for his Power Five schools.
He's got a recent football newcomer, UMass, in there, which we'll get to.
Yeah. All right, we'll go. We'll do his first game first, but just for the people know, Steve does not have a single Power Five school. He is doing
well.
That's
the Missouri Valley Conference, by the way.
Yeah,
UMass.
He was 3-3 last week, though. He had some losses for one of his ups, actually. His Valley game, he lost. He picked Drake over Northern Iowa, and the Panthers reigned supreme in that one. All right, his first game. I've been getting at it for about 5 minutes here. Tonight at 6, which is going on right now, New Hampshire and Albany. Albany is favored. Steve's going with New Hampshire because New Hampshire's got the 47%. That's the down. I will go with, for my first pick, a similar pick. No, excuse me, my next pick is similar. This one is actually just a blowout. Thursday, tonight at 10, the late game, the nightcap on CBS, St. Mary's and Pepperdine. St. Mary's is favored 95%, and they're my up pick.
We don't have to spend much more time because I've also got St. Mary's tonight at 10 on CBS Sports Network.
The nightcap.
Nightcap.
Let's go chronological today just so I can keep track of it. So Saturday at noon on Big Ten Network, it's Illinois and Wisconsin. Wisconsin favored by the slimmest of margins, and I don't buy it. Illinois trying to wrap up a good Big Ten conference play season.
Steve sees his next game of mid-major talent, mid-major madness, 8 o'clock tonight on the U, ESPN U. Tennessee State versus Little Rock. Little Rock is home. They are favored, and they are his up pick at 78%, just getting under the equator of 80%, where it is illegal to pick more than one over 80%. Steve has two picks under 80%. By less than two. He has a 78.5 and a 79.1.
You could tell
Steve came to play.
You could tell with these percentages. He's coming for you this
week.
He's
coming to play. All he did when I texted the group chat today that I'm winning pick six, he just thumbs down my message. And for those who might not listen to our show weekly, they might not know that Steve, we've had him on before, is our radio faculty advisor. So it's basically texting your teacher, I'm beating you in three up, three down. He just sent me a thumbs down. All right, my next pick is on Saturday at 11 a.m. on ESPN or the SEC Network, Florida and South Carolina, in which South Carolina is favored at 50.3. So Florida is technically down, and they're my pick.
Let's keep it to tonight. It's actually going on right now. Three up, three down. What am I saying? Florida Gulf Coast against Jacksonville. Jacksonville the favorite at home, but give me the down 53.90%. Florida Gulf Coast.
We're getting into this game well. We're all making smart picks these days. This is gonna be a tough week for the standings. Braden.
Okay. Anyway, I don't know where you're. After my first game on Saturday, it's South Dakota State versus North Dakota State, and there can only be one. So South Dakota State is favored just barely. North Dakota State, I got them. They're my second down pick.
Steve, also tonight at 9 o'clock on ESPN, plus Cal State Fullerton versus Long Beach. At Long Beach, they're favored 79%. They're Steve's up pick, technically under 80. We move on to my third pick. And it is the same that Fogerson said on the Big Ten Network on noon on Saturday. Illinois and Wisconsin. Wisconsin favored at only 51%. Again, I'm not buying it. I can't go with the Cheeseheads. I'm going with the Fighting Illini. Ben?
Let's make it pick one because I also have Illinois beating Wisconsin. That line is just kind of gross. We're probably all going to end up losing that pick because why wouldn't we?
Well, the two teams haven't played yet. This is their only game between the two this season, so it's very hard to pick. It's just all we know is that Wisconsin has underperformed more than Illinois has
spiraling.
They're unranked. Are they unranked at this point? Or they're
unranked.
Fell out? Yeah.
Wisconsin spiraling. Illinois is on the up.
This is the last gasp. This really means a lot to Wisconsin
heading into the Big Ten tournament. We move on to Steve's next pick because we all went with Illinois and Wisconsin. Feels like pick six, like you said, Ben. It's getting down to pick four. We go to Steve's next pick. He moves on to Saturday. UNC Asheville versus Radford. At Radford, they're up 55.8%. But Steve's going down with UNC Asheville in this one on Saturday at 1 o'clock. And my next pick on ABC on Saturday at noon. Big noon Saturday, but it's basketball. It's Kansas. It's Baylor. Baylor is favored at 71%. Baylor is my pick. At 71%. Ooh. Rock chalk loss.
All right, let's bring it back on Saturday. I love me some Saturday college basketball games. It's the best, 3 o'clock, and I love picking my Pac-12 games as well. At 79.30%, so I'm just under that 80. I love it. Just Washington under. To beat Bronny James and the USC Trojans. Give me Washington on the up.
So we're just naming teams after like bench players now. So we're gonna Ty Pence's Illinois State Redbirds. Like, are we just gonna start saying that? Now?
I mean, okay. Who's the star of USC?
I don't know, but it's not Bronny James.
He just got pulled off the draft board. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. Well, and to be fair, like I'm not trying to be a jerk. Like, yeah, like I'm hoping the best for him. Like, I hope he gets really good. But like, he needs to play a couple years in college.
Like, I hope Bronny James is like, I want to be a Bronny James fan. I'll never be a LeBron James fan, but I'll be a Bronny James.
That's
fan.
That's baseless. You can't do that. It's like saying like think of like other like
no, but Bronny James. Bronny James has so many doubters at this point. Like, everyone's saying his brother Bryce is better than him, and I'm here for it. I'm a Bronny James fan.
I'm not saying he's bad.
I'm marking it here. Stamp of approval.
I'm just saying, like,
I hate LeBron, but I love Bronny.
I mean, you're just sitting here saying, I'm trying to think of another example. Nick Foligno's Chicago Blackhawks. Like, you're just telling us, like, random players, and you're just going to say, oh, it's their team.
Jose Kwas is Chicago Cubs.
Literally. What's the Cardinals one? Brandon Crawford's St. Louis Cardinals. That one might actually be true.
Yeah.
Kyle Gibson.
I've lost the plot on what the category we're fitting everyone into.
It's a role player who is the marquee player, because Ben said Bronny James is USC Trojans.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll have to think about that.
Yeah. We move on to your pick.
I've got one more. This
Chris
is the
Bryan
third pick,
Colorado
I believe.
Rockies.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
One more Saturday game for everyone to watch out for on the SEC Network at 2:30. It's Louisiana State v. Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt should just stick to baseball. I say go Tigers.
Go Tigers. We're on to the
go Tigers.
Fifth pick? Yes, we're on to the fifth pick for Steve, the second to last. 1:30 on Saturday on USA. It's UMass and Davidson. Davidson is favored at 51%, but he's going UMass at 49 for a down pick. And my fifth pick on ESPN Plus at 3 p.m. on Saturday, South Florida and Charlotte. Charlotte is favored at 62%. South Florida's ranked, and they're favored at only, like, what is that, 37, 38%. I didn't like this line. This felt like a random line. I really didn't like
Trap.
It. They're a better record. They're in the same conference in which South Florida has a better conference record. They're ranked, and just because Charlotte's at home, they felt that they're favored at 62% clip. I don't like it. South Florida, give me a down pick.
Going back on Saturday, 4:30, Big Ten Network, right after the Illinois game. You could get some more Illinois basketball hunch with Northwestern going against Iowa. Northwestern has been awesome this mm-hmm. year. They lead the nation in three-point percentage. They have them at a favor of 68.10%. Give me Northwestern for my last up pick.
For me, I've got on a Sunday some Valley action, and it's Ooh. Valparaiso versus ISU. I don't know if anyone else picked it, but I'm taking the Birds. They
nice.
Really need it to hang on to their seed, and I'm going to take them on this one.
I love it. I thought about it. I didn't go with it. I'll talk about my Valley pick next, but I thought about it. Steve's Valley pick, by the way, a different Valley game from you or me. 3 o'clock on ESPN Plus on Sunday. Murray State, Indiana State, Indiana State, and Robbie Avila favored at 91% versus the Racers, and that's Steve's Valley pick and his 80% pick.
They're calling him Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I saw that because
he has the glasses.
Yeah.
Did you see the graphic on Fox Sports when they played, and it was players who wear goggles, or all-time players who wear goggles, and it was like Kareem, Horace Grant, and Robbie Avila.
My dad dressed up as Horace, or I don't think it was Horace, it was Kurt Rambis. But
Rambis, another good one.
Yeah, that old stuff.
Another good one. Well, who was Horace Grant said on a podcast, I want to say like a week or two ago, that he I saw it on Instagram. He had LASIK surgery like at one point in the mid-90s, and he only kept wearing the goggles because so many like kids and parents came up to him and said like, hey, like, I like that you wear the glasses. Like, it makes my son or me feel better about playing with glasses.
How many brand deals do you think that led to?
I'm sure, even in the 90s, I'm sure it was huge for brand deals. Yeah, for, you know, the classic sports goggles.
Two picks left, Mikey.
We have two picks left?
Yes.
No, we've won.
No, we have one.
I have two games that I haven't said.
No.
Nah.
Then we must have fallen behind at some point.
I don't know. Anyway,
all right, you'll always catch up if we need to, because I only have one left. That was Steve's last pick.
Okay.
I have one left. USC and Missouri State on Sunday at 1 o'clock on ESPN+. Plus, Missouri State at home, 71%. I'm taking them. They played a really good game last night, brought ISU to their heels. very similar level to ISU, and USC is lower than both of them. So I'm going to go with the Bears on that safe pick.
I'm going to flip on you. Yeah, I'm going USC in that game. I just had to pick another down game, and I hadn't picked a Valley game yet. All the Valley games are on Sunday. They're kind of gross when
I'm
looking at them.
You want to pick up over ISU.
Exactly. So I'm taking UIC on a down.
I get it. Braden?
So I don't know. You guys are all done. Anyway, I got two. So on Tuesday at 6, ACC Network, it's Cheater Dame and UNC. And North Carolina, that's my over 80. Just not going to put too much thought into that one. And then lastly, it's UConn versus Marquette. UConn, a higher ranking in AP polls, but Marquette is favored for some reason. And I don't buy that. That's my last down pick. That's on Wednesday.
People put too much weight into being a home team. If you're UConn, who won the national title last year and has been ranked number one overall at some point this year, that you're not going to – you shouldn't be favored that much less. I mean, I guess it is a coin flip at only 54%. By the way, with just a couple minutes left here, Ben, you're going to take that Cheater Dame? You hear that?
They're horrible at basketball. We could get into a conversation, though, really quick. Did you guys hear about their they might want to be joining a conference soon.
I heard. Potentially the they're already the Big Ten for hockey. I learned that.
They're Big Ten for hockey. They're ACC for basketball.
Okay.
So there's going to be something kind of interesting here going on. For anyone, for context, Notre Dame is not in a conference in football.
No.
They stand by their beliefs, and I love that. But they might have to switch up, because if they're the number one team in the nation next year, they will not get a bye in the 12-man college football playoff because it goes to the top four conference winners. So Notre Dame might have to consider hopping on
wishful thinking. Yeah. Wishful thinking.
It's all right, though. We're going to be back next year. Riley Leonard's going to bring us to the promised land.
Getting ahead of themselves. Wishful thinking. Get good. Don't lose to Louisville. Then maybe you can join a conference.
We do. We got the rematch this year.
Yeah, well, they're going to lose again.
Nope.
All right. Talk to you next week here on the Red Zone. Thank you for listening.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson looking out, drives inside, going to find Mary Crompton for her first three of the day, and it's good.
Curry owned the league last year, personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
I dare you, I've got five.